Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by Cashfly.
Today on Know-How, BitLocker, backpacking, and Burke. That's right. This episode of Know-How is brought to you by the letter B. Know-How, it's a Twit show where we build, bend, break, and karate kick, crane, jump thing. You know, that move actually really does not work. You know how many kids imitated that after that movie came out?
Honestly, you're signaling a lot if you're in a fight doing the crane kick. You're like, hold on one second.
It's like, and you're like, I'm going to kick you.
Yeah, there's no surprise
I'm gonna
element.
I'm going to kick
you. You know what's about to happen.
No, but we're not here to talk about karate. We've got a traveling episode, part two. That's right. Last week with Megan, we went over some of the basics from people who are going to be doing some interesting trips over the next couple of months. We had a couple more. I didn't feel right just choosing one out of the travel bag because there's a lot. Evidently, people go places. This is amazing.
Yeah. Can I just say, last week's episode, one of my favorites. It was hands down, it was amazing. Megan, when she said that thing, it was hilarious. Yeah. I mean, it's great. You really need to watch
this. This is totally not because this is a pre-recorded episode.
Don't pull back the curtain, man.
Wait, am I breaking that wall?
Yes, you are.
Dang it. I always do that.
I had them up until you said that.
You did. But Jason, I thought we would take it a bit more serious to start this episode.
That's going to be hard for me, but all right.
We're going to go serious. We've got a business question, specifically a security business question for travelers, which is still a traveling question. And then we've got something that's a bit more traditional. Did you ever go like backpacking after college? Did you do that thing?
I always wanted to do that. I could never get my act together. And now I think that ship has sailed.
It's funny because I never did it either after high school or after university. But then since joining the Jesuits, I've basically been a backpacker for 24 years. So.
Well, you know, nowadays, that's like a badge of honor for millennials, right?
Right.
from what I've read anyways, instead of saving their money, they're spending it now on travel, a lot of backpacking, a lot of exploring the world now while you can. And so this is perfectly appropriate for them.
Of course, while you're traveling as a millennial, you need tech. Which is what this episode's going to be all about. Let's go ahead and kick it off because we're going to start a bit more on the serious side. We've got a question here from Martin P. from New York, New York, who wants our help to protect his data. Jason, what does the good Martin say?
The good Martin says, I am a Twit listener who just started watching Know How on a Twit episode several years ago. You and Chibert talked about traveling.
Yes.
All right. Reveling in secure. No. Traveling securely with your data in hostile countries. What would you recommend for a traveler who needs to access sensitive data offline? I won't have my office VPN and need a solution that can carry just under 50 gigs of data. It's okay if the device is destroyed as long as no third parties can read it. Ideally, I need a solution that works well with my company-issued Dell laptop that's running Windows 10 Enterprise and my home desktop running Windows 10 Home. The office will pay for a solution up to $200 without me having to ask for special permission. Love the show!
Martin, great question. Also, Martin, I should say to everyone out there, when you send me emails, double-check your spelling because I don't always do that before I copy and paste over into the doc.
Raveling sounds like a word to me.
Raveling's fun.
Yeah.
You've never raveled? You've never ribbed.
You're a ravel-rouser?
Sorry.
I had no idea.
We're getting into a weird spot here.
Yeah, we started that way.
Yeah, we did. But what I wanted to do was show a couple of easy solutions, one of which he already has. He says he can spend about $200 before needing special permission. I understand that. That's how typically expense accounts works. It's like, $50 purchase, no problem. $300 purchase, you need to fill out a bunch of forms.
Right.
So we're going to get you in underneath that that limit. We're going to start you with something super, super simple. You said about 50 gigabytes worth of data, and I understand what he's talking about. Chibert and I, this must have been 3 or 4 years ago. This was a while. We were talking about traveling what we called hostile countries, specifically China. Both Jibrid and I have had bad experiences of doing things like putting secure devices, either hard drives or USB drives, into like the hotel safe, and we come back and it's not the same drive.
What? Seriously?
Yeah, or it's like, this looks like someone's moved it or someone's accessed it. And wow. It's kind of a thing. I mean, you have to be very aware. Paranoia when traveling to countries that are known to do this sort of stuff is not really paranoia. Mm-hmm. Luckily, there are a couple of very simple solutions that you can adopt that will really help you to secure your data. Now, he said a VPN wasn't really an option for him. And I get it, because if you're traveling to China, VPN can be spotty. They block a lot of VPN tunnels, so that won't be a good thing. That's what my preference is. I prefer to have no data on my local device, so even if they take my local device, doesn't matter, they can't do anything with it. But if you don't have access to being online, if you can't access a VPN, or if you just don't have internet connectivity whatsoever, you do need to travel with the data. This is the first product that I would suggest that you use. This, if you go to the overhead, Burke, this is the Data Traveler 2000 from Kingston, the overhead, which is over the head. There you go. The Data Traveler 2000. This is a 64 gigabyte drive from Kingston, and we've got a link here, Burke. This is about $100 to $160, depending on how much capacity you need, all the way down from 16 gigabytes all the way up to 64 gigabytes. This is actually pretty good. It's a USB 3.0 device. It uses AES 256-bit encryption. It's a six-number PIN that you get to input on the keypad here. It's FIPS 197 compatible, which means it will work with enterprise standard security if you've got like an Active Directory running or policy that requires you to be compatible with that standard. It's also OS independent. Unlike a lot of the other encryption methods that we'll use, this is all done in the drive. So it will work on Linux, it will work on Macs, it will work on Windows, it will work on basically anything that can access the file system.
So instead of decrypting it within the computer, like plugging it in, decrypting it through software, that's what the PIN code is for doing prior to plugging it in?
Right. This actually has an encryption engine in it, which is nice. There's a lot of cheap drives out there that they call themselves encrypted drives. What they actually are is the regular USB drives that have a app that gets loaded on the computer.
Oh, right. Yeah, different.
That's different because now it is operating system dependent. If the operating system doesn't support that app, it can't encrypt or decrypt. The other problem with doing it that way is you're sucking down the power of your computer. You're using part of it for the encryption decryption. The engine is built into this, which is why it's a bit more expensive. But here's what you get for it. So here, if you go to the overhead, this is kind of cool. So I've got the standard 6-digit code here. The way it would work is I'd hit the key. That little red button will come on. A super
you
secure
can't get in.
1-1-2-2-3-3-4-4. Hit it again, and it will turn green. Now, once it's green, I just plug it into my computer like so, and
it's blinking a little bit. You can't see that; it's off screen, but it's kind of
and
accessing.
Burke, if you go to my computer, there you go. So it looks just like a USB drive. But anything I put in here is automatically encrypted. Now, people have asked this, what happens if I lift the chips off of the USB drive?
Right.
And for some, that actually would work because they don't actually encrypt, they just protect. So what happens is the code...
Like they put a shield in front of it.
But, right. It basically turns the controller off, so you can't access the memory. Well, if they pull the memory off, they can still read it. On this, it's encrypted on the memory. So even if they pull the chips off, the key, which is stored inside the hardware engine inside this USB drive, will not be accessible, and therefore they won't be able to read anything.
Does that slow down any sort of transfer accessibility? Is there any perceivable kind of slowdown on access?
Yes. So if you were to compare this to any of the other USB drives that we use, this actually is slower. And the reason why it's slower is because it has to do with encryption and a decryption layer, and it's not like it's a crazy fast processor in there. It's basically an embedded processor, right? Now, the other thing that you need to know about this is the fact that, when you're going to use, if you go to the overhead again, if you're going to use a format like this, this is set up so that 10 consecutive incorrect entries of the PIN
wipes it?
Well, it doesn't wipe the data, but it deletes the key. And once the key is deleted, it's as good as wiped. You can't ever recover that.
Oh, right. Unless you were to be able to get... No, well, I guess you couldn't even guess it. At that point, it's like, there's no way to get into it.
It's gone. Forget it. The encryption key is gone. You're not going to access that data.
Right.
Which is kind of what I like. It also means that if you're in a bind and you really need someone not to be able to access your device, you could just really quickly hit 10 incorrect codes, and it will wipe the key. And you can still use the device. It doesn't brick the device. But you'd have to reformat it and then...
Oh, I see. And you'd have to start over. So it's not like the device is there for, from that point forward, deemed completely unusable.
Right.
It's just anything you had stored on there, you're not going to ever
get. And that's what actually he said, because Martin P. said it's okay if the device breaks. It's okay if the data gets lost. In other words, this is not the only copy. You wouldn't want your only copy to be on this encrypted drive. However, if you need to travel with sensitive information, this is a great way to do it. To ensure that only the people that you grant access can read it. Oh, by the way, there's also a mode on this. I can use a different PIN, and I put it into read-only mode. So now I can hand it to somebody, and they can read any of the information, but they cannot write to it, so they can't delete anything. So it's kind of a multi-use drive.
And they can move from it or copy from it?
Right. So it's not like, oh, here you go. It's read-only, so you can't do anything, because they could still copy the information off.
Right,
This is one of my favorite. I've actually played around with a lot of these, because I do a lot of international travel. This probably has the highest throughput of all the iron key-style encrypted drives that I've used. It's also crazy durable.
It looks durable. It's
I actually... all the standard stuff. I've put it through the wash. I've left it out in the sun. It's gotten way too hot. It's gotten way too cold. I actually froze one of these in a block of ice once, and it still worked. So.
I can't bite through it, so that's good.
You've got those adamantium teeth.
Yes. Or razor sharp teeth. Razor sharp teeth. Don't come at me, bro.
Right. So this is the Data Traveler 2000. This is not bad, and this does run under your $200 budget, and you'd still have a little bit of space to spare.
Yeah.
Now... I want to show something else, because people may not want to buy an encrypted drive. And the thing is, if you're running Windows 10 Enterprise or Pro, you actually don't have to.
Okay, that's explain.
That's a tease. We'd call that in the industry. I'm teasing them. All right, so if you've got any sort of drive, any sort of data unit. So this is one of the devices that we created on KnowHow way, way back. If you go to the overhead, this is actually...
You created that?
Oh, yeah. This is an mSATA drive inside of a USB 3 enclosure. This gives me half a gigabyte or half a terabyte worth of storage, and it's crazy fast. Mm. Most USB drives will read write at maybe 100 megabytes per second, all the way up to 200 if they're really fast. And at that point, they're crazy expensive. This will do 500.
Wow.
Yeah, we like this. And it's actually a lot cheaper. Yeah. It's pretty solid. I glued that thing together.
It's got a nice healthy layer of glue in there.
Okay, we're actually going to use a wonderful little tool that's built into Windows ever since... Well, I really started using it with Windows 7, but it's also in Windows 8 and it's in Windows 10. It's called BitLocker. Now, BitLocker is a cool tool because, first, it's free if you've got Windows, but also because it's actually quite good. It's AES 256-bit encryption, so it's the same as that USB drive that we just took a look at. It will run on Windows 7 Pro and Enterprise, Windows 8 and 8.1 Pro and Enterprise, Windows Server 2008 and later, Windows 10 and Enterprise, and, I'll show you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and connect this little USB drive.
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to pop up in just a moment here. Okay. If you go to my computer, Burke, there you go. So there it is. It's fresh. It's the local drive D. Actually, let's see if I can increase the icons. Oh, wrong way.
Oh, that helped.
Make bigger. Bigger. Bad. Bigger.
Oh.
Bigger. Bigger, Jason.
Okay. We have the technology.
We do. So I'm going to right-click this. And you'll notice there's an option here, turn on BitLocker. Now, here's the rub.
That's easy.
Windows 10 Home can read this.
Okay.
It cannot create it. If you have Windows 10 Home and you right-click, there is no turn on BitLocker option. That's because it's a Pro and Enterprise version for Windows 10.
Oh,
however, okay. Once it's created by a Windows Pro or Enterprise machine, a home machine can read the files. It just can't write to the drive.
And manage it or whatever.
Right. So here's what we're going to do. It's super simple. I'm going to turn on BitLocker. I'll get this little pop-up in just a second. There we go. Now, I get to choose a couple of things. The first is, how do I want to unlock the drive? I prefer to use the password just because that is far more portable. I can bring that from computer to computer, and they all, as long as I have the password, I'm good. You can also use a smart card. If you've got an enterprise laptop, there's a good chance that you've got the option to use a smart card. I kind of like that because it's another piece of physical security.
What is a smart card?
It's just, it looks like a credit card with a chip in it.
Oh, okay.
Or you can have like a USB device like the Fetian that we took a look at a while back that has encryption built into it. So it kind of verifies who you are. But in this particular case, we're just going to use the password. So I'm going to use my super secret password, 11223344. Burke, make sure you blur that out.
Blur out those dots.
Get rid of those dots and cut that audio because, you know, otherwise everyone will know my banking passwords. Now, I get a chance to back up the recovery key if I want to. I can save it to my Microsoft account, which is nice because then it will be in the cloud. I could save it to a file and then put it on, say, a separate USB drive, or I could print it. I could have a printout of the recovery key. Now, this is in case I mess up and I need to get back in.
Right.
I'll still have that way to sort of get back into the device that I messed up. Mm-hmm. One thing, though, if you're going to do it this way, if you're going to either make a physical file, or not physical file, but a file that will be put onto a physical device, or print out a physical copy of the key, don't keep it.
Yeah, you probably don't want to keep it in the same place because then what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's too easy.
That's ridiculous. That's like people who leave a Post-it note with the PIN number for their ATM around the ATM card. Don't do that.
That's exactly
it. Bad. I'm talking to you. Bad. Okay.
I think everybody that watches this show isn't doing that. But I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt.
If you are the one person who's doing that, please write Jason at twitter.com/Jason Howell and tell him no. I do that all the time. You know you're going to get people writing that, right?
I want to know. I actually do want to know.
It's a good thing. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and save it to my Microsoft account. That's how I actually would prefer.
And so that backup recovery key is then stored in your Microsoft account. How? Like, how do you access
that? So if I were to go to, like, Bing.com and go log in, I can actually go to account. It's just like logging into Google. I can go into my Microsoft account. It shows me all of my active subscriptions. It shows me what I'm using. It also shows me my backup key.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is kind of fun. All right, so I'm done with this. I'm going to go ahead and go to next. Now, how much of my drive I want to encrypt? BitLocker is actually a logical drive encryption key. So it can encrypt across multiple physical drives. It just looks at the logical drive. So if I have one hard drive that's divided up into four logical drives, I can make four different BitLocker volumes. Mm-hmm. If I have three drives that are striped together to look like one logical drive, it will encrypt across all three drives. So whatever, like the D drive or the C drive, that's your logical drive. This is what it's going to do. I'm going to go ahead and encrypt using disk space only. If I was doing a device that's going to be switching between, say, Windows 10 and Windows 7, I would use this one. I would encrypt the entire drive. It's slower, but it makes sure that it's compatible with the older version. This is much faster, so I'm going to encrypt just what I've got. I'm going to make it compatible because I do want to be able to use it with others. And the encryption process is actually really simple. Now, this little lock that you see on the icon, that means that this drive has now been locked. If I remove it...
Even though it's unlocked in the picture?
Right. Well, it means it's been BitLockered. If I remove it, though, it automatically locks. So there is no locking process. It's not like I have to tell it, okay, now lock. Right. It's encrypted. And if
by default.
Yeah, go back to my computer. So if I pull this.
Well, you just won't see it anymore when you pull it, right?
If I pull this, then I kill this little. The HDMI adapter, which is wonderful. We love it when that happens in the middle of an administration.
Oh, that's a bummer. It's like it confused it.
Yeah.
Pulling the USB device from it.
Well, we're having this little problem in
even when you pull it, though, you're not going to see it in the list, right? Because it's not there anymore.
Right.
When you put it back in, you'll see it with a lock.
When I put it back in, it will actually ask me for a password.
Got it.
There we go. So I'm going to go ahead and plug this thing back in. Click Sue. And it's got to discover it. There we go. See, the drive is not accessible until I'm going to go ahead and put in my password, 11223344. No, go ahead, stay on that screen. There we go. And once I do that, I will go ahead and it will give me the option to now bring it up. Oh, come on. Come on, Windows. Cooperate. There you go. So now it's back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's super, super simple. And if I'm hooking this up to, say, the Windows 10 Home, because he said he has the enterprise laptop and then the home desktop, if you hook it up to the home machine, what will happen is we'll ask you for the password. If you put in the password, you can read all the files. You just won't be able to delete or copy onto the drive.
Right.
However, you could still copy off the drive, work on it, and then, say, send it to yourself.
Cool.
Not.
I mean, that's a nice feature to just have baked into the OS.
Precisely.
And not to have to go, you know, searching for open source software that does this or whatever.
Precisely. Precisely.
Very nice.
Now, if he had asked this question 2 years ago, I would have told him TrueCrypt. TrueCrypt was what I was using.
Yeah, that's what I used to use, is TrueCrypt. Why wouldn't you recommend that now?
They deprecated it. Basically, they abandoned the project.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, don't do it. There's other open source projects, but TrueCrypt really put that bad taste in my mouth. It's like, look, if I'm going to invest in something, if I'm going to use it, I want it to be around for a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially
because you're trusting it with your most important stuff.
Precisely.
I mean, technically, you're going to the lengths of encrypting it and protecting it. You want to make sure that it's around for as long as you need it to be around.
Well, I mean, if the project dies and I can't get updates, or something breaks and no one's supporting it's the same thing as you just deleted my data.
Yep.
It's all encrypted. I can't access it. It's gone.
Absolutely.
The other thing is I created this just because we were doing it as a know-how project. You don't have to make a super fast USB drive. In fact, if you buy yourself basically any extension kit, they're normally going to include some sort of external enclosure. This is just one of the HyperX SSDs that I like so much inside of an external USB enclosure. This works just as well, and it's just as encrypted. So if someone were to pull this out after I've BitLockered it, they wouldn't be able to read it unless they had my key, my credentials.
Right. Which you've printed out and taped to the drive.
Well, right on the inside. Yeah. I tattoo it.
No, but I put it on the inside. People won't know to look there.
I met an interesting person at DEF CON who had this 16-digit hexadecimal value on his arm. I'm like, what's that? And he goes, oh, that's the security key I use. I'm like, and you have it on your arm.
He's got to be trolling.
I know. I'm like, that can't be right. He goes, no, man, no one's going to know that that's what that is. You just told me.
That guy's trolling. He's trolling. I don't believe it for a second.
A little bit of alcohol involved, so I don't know.
He wanted to see if you'd fall for it.
Yeah. So don't tape your ATM PIN number to your card
and don't tattoo
it on your arm.
Yes. Good. We're giving you all the tips that you needed to hear, aren't we?
Well, I mean, there are business travelers all around the world right now who are going, I bet if I tattoo it, it'll be okay. Oh, no, even better.
As long as I
tattoo it on your back, so you have to be in a mirror.
Yes.
So you have to tattoo it backwards.
But then everybody sees it when you're at the swimming pool. Bad idea.
Oh, we are full of good ideas. We're full of something here on Know How. All right, let's go ahead and move on. We actually do have another question. And this one's a bit more fun. If you're not big into the business travel, what about backpacking? We got a question from Medico from Santa Clara, California. And Jason,
yes. What
does Mariko want to know?
Says, know-it-alls, I'm a second-year communications student at Santa Clara University. This summer, I'll be backpacking around Europe with a group of 5 friends, documenting our travel. We're packing light, only what we can put in a backpack that must be able to fit in an airplane overhead bin. My loadout is currently using about 2 square feet of space, and I'm allocating 1 square foot for gear. I'm bringing an Acer Swift 7 and a Pixel 2, as well as the Anchor battery pack that you like. I plan to upload content over Wi-Fi whenever we can find it, but I'd like to have messaging capabilities on my phone. I'd also like a second screen, like your portable USB monitor, but with the option of connecting other HDMI source, like a Blu-ray player or an HD camera for previewing shots. Any other tips on backpacking gear would be most welcomed. Wish us luck.
Yep.
Good luck.
Good luck. Good luck.
We got that out of the way. Now,
first of all, Mariko, Santa Clara University, awesome university. Only awesome people come from Santa Clara University.
Did you come from Santa Clara?
Maybe a little bit. So that might be my alma mater, but okay. Whatever. first of all, back to the original discussion we had at the top of the show. This is kind of awesome, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to do this.
Backpacking is one thing. Backpacking with friends, that's got to be killer.
I always wanted to do this. I never was able to make it happen. Priorities when you're 20, 21, 22 are ever-changing and sometimes kind of ridiculous.
Well, it's kind of too late for us.
Yes.
Because when you have to start thinking of not just, okay, I need to make sure I have enough clothes, I have to have deodorant, I have to have my tech, it's like, well, I need the medications I normally take. I need that vapor rub because,
Did you pack the vapor rub? I never had it. I never could get it together to make that happen. So I'm very envious, and I highly encourage that you do that because, you know, at a certain point, it's a lot more difficult to pull it off. So good on you for making it happen.
Impossible.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, you travel differently as you get older. You don't travel in the same way.
I'm actually serious about that. Now I have to consider, well, gosh, I don't think my body could go through that.
Yeah.
At 20 years old, I'm like, it'll probably be okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just assumed it was going to turn out okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so let's break this down. The first thing that Mariko mentioned was that she wanted to have some sort of messaging. Now, from the last episode, the one that I did with Megan last week, you know that I always suggest getting a local SIM. That is so much better than trying to pay for minutes from Verizon or Sprint or AT&T. Have you tried that?
No, I mean, I haven't been let me back up. On T-Mobile, I had a prepaid plan up until very recently. Now I'm on Project 5, which I understand is very good for travel. So, you know, that could be another solution. But I've never really traveled and had to pick up minutes on a carrier where I happen to be going. It's just, I haven't had to do that.
Well, we had sort of a head-to-head 2 years ago when we did, I think it was IFA. It was Brian Burnett and myself. He went through the rigmarole of contacting Verizon and making sure he bought the package that would work in Germany. And this is just one country. And I just went, because I do this all the time. I'm like, oh, Germany, I can just buy a SIM in the airport. It takes me all of 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it cost €25. And it was like 8 gigabytes of data and unlimited voice for a month, which was fantastic. I mean, it comes out to about that rate of, what do they call it? Exchange. Mm-hmm. It was about $30, USD. He paid $110 and got like a gig of data and maybe 300 minutes of voice.
Wow.
It was just like,
That's crazy.
So if you're willing, again, the SIM cards I love, and you can always get them at the airport. In fact, the only airport, and I mentioned this last week, the only airport I would not suggest buying a SIM from is Rome. Don't do it. They're thieves. They're absolutely thieves. Barcelona, Berlin, Tokyo, even Mykonos in Greece, the SIM cards that you buy in the airport are basically the same price as the ones that you might buy at a vendor stall.
Okay.
But in Rome, if you try to buy a SIM from an airport, it'll cost you like €200 versus €5 buying it outside a stall in front of St. Peter's.
Right.
And it's the exact same service. So, yeah.
Now, one thing I'm picking up on here is that Mariko is bringing a Pixel 2.
Yes.
Which means that, really, you could go the Fi route. Like, why not? Fi is known to be a really great great way to go if you're doing a lot of traveling.
Yep.
And the Pixel 2 has the eSIM already inside of the device. You sign up for a Fi plan before you go, which you can cancel anytime. I think it's just month to month, and you can cancel it, right?
Yep.
So you sign up. It's a $20 minimum for unlimited data, unlimited text. I don't know how that translates to when you are traveling, if it's unlimited over there.
Right.
But worth looking into anyways as another option. Instead of doing it there, pick up a Fi plan if the numbers work out for you, and then you don't have to worry about it. You already have the phone that's perfect. Yeah. For Fi.
Well, I mean, she's got a unicorn. I mean, the phones that work with Fi are very limited compared to the number of Android phones that are out there. So you've got one of the compatible phones. Try it out. See if it works.
Yep.
The other thing is, if she didn't mention what her carrier currently is, if you use T-Mobile and if you have a not the pay as you go, but the I get to call it month to month or yearly. If you have a yearly plan, you get free international texting.
Okay.
So if you're really just looking for messaging, that continues to work. That's actually just part of your plan, so you don't have to buy anything else. There is one other alternative, Jason, and that
only
is
one.
This. It's not really new. We actually took a look at it last year. It's called ChatSIM, and the whole idea is it's a product that you can buy It's just a SIM that you can drop in your phone, and it works basically everywhere. You pay one flat fee a year, and we go. But instead of talking to me, why don't we go and talk to one of the people from ChatSIM? Let's take a jump in the Wayback Machine and check out CES and ChatSIM.
Let's do it.
We're a digital age, and we're all tied to our phones. But what happens when you go out of the country? What happens when you go out of your service area? What happens when your smartphone becomes dumb because you're not connected? Well, you could get yourself an expensive data plan. You could make sure that you're always within range of a Wi-Fi access point. Or you could get ChatSIM. I'm here with Pierre, who's going to explain what ChatSIM will do for the connected generation. Pierre, what is ChatSIM?
Okay, we're the world's first global service provider for chat applications. Okay, what that means is that we allow you to use all your chat applications, so Facebook Messenger, WhatsApp are the two principal ones, but also if you're an Asian, WeChat, which another billion people use WeChat, and that's now 5.3 billion people use those chat applications. So we only allow those applications to go through, but you can use them in 150 countries, okay, for a fixed price per year of $15. And for that's the text and emoji for $15 unlimited. But if you use WhatsApp and you're used to sending pictures or you like sending video clips or making VoIP calls within the app, then we activate multimedia on your SIM. And for another $15, we sell you 2,000 credits. So you send a picture, it's about 4 credits. You make a small VoIP call of 30 seconds, it's about 4 or 5 credits. So basically, you can then just use your chat applications like you're used to using them in 150 countries without changing your SIM card.
I can't tell you how impressed I am with the solution, because we are accustomed in the United States of being able to go coast to coast. And you can always use your phone, your service. There's enough partnerships that you're going to be able to use one cell tower and another cell tower to get back to your provider. But once you go overseas, all bets are off. In fact, in the last 6 months, I've been in France, in Germany, in Italy, in Asia. And it's sometimes tricky because you get that ominous text from your provider saying, warning, you're roaming. It's going to charge you 65 cents per text or $15 a minute. If I have a SIM that I know I'm covered, that takes all the guesswork out.
It's not only that, but we did a lot of experimenting before we launched the product, okay? And when you're roaming, 90% of the data is used by the background apps. So you're paying a huge amount of money for the data. And guess who's using it? Google, Facebook, to talk to their servers, to talk to their ads, right? And you're paying for that through the nose. So we block all that. So that's one of the things we do, is we block 90% of the background data. So only these applications get through, the chat applications get through. That makes a huge difference. That's why we can get the price point where it is.
One of the things I'm looking forward to is I have a dual SIM phone, and I use that because I always keep my original SIM, and then I put the SIM from the international carrier, and that's always, always just for text, because I don't do any of the data-heavy functions when I'm overseas. If I have a chat SIM in there, I can actually tell my phone, this is a OnePlus 3T, use that SIM just for chat, just for these messages, don't use it for anything else, and that makes my device so much more useful.
Well, we do. I mean, one of the cases we've done is through a lot of Asia. A lot of Asian phones are now dual SIM phones. And we think that's a move which will actually come to the U.S. If you ask, say to someone here, dual SIM phone, they look at you and say, why do I need a dual SIM phone? In Asia, they understand this. In Europe, they understand this more and more. But the Asians are having trouble selling their dual SIM phones here for exactly that reason. So we've done a deal with some of the Asians where they actually they insert a chat SIM in that second slot, and they sell the phone to you as a world phone. So it's exactly that thing. So they say, here's a phone you can use in 150 countries. You know, that's a different proposition than saying, buy a dual SIM phone.
And because it's only $15 a year, it's really something you should kind of keep in your pack anyways if you're going to be traveling internationally. Oh, can you please tell the folks, sure, if they're at home thinking, that's something I should get, or that's something I'd like to put in an old phone just so I have a dedicated chat machine, where should they go?
Okay, well, this is what you get, and you buy it on Amazon in the U.S., so if you're on Amazon Prime, it arrives in 24 hours. That's $30, and that's the SIM card, which is a one-time purchase of $15. See the SIM card there, which is pre-punched for all the phones. You don't need to worry about it not fitting into your phone, okay? And then the first year of text and emoji is included unlimited. And then you activate it. You go online, you activate it. And then if you want to add multimedia, and about 70% of the people do add the multimedia, and then it's done. Then literally you have it you get on the plane and you're going to, I don't know, Australia or Bangkok or somewhere nice and exotic, hopefully. Or it could be Canada. That's pretty exotic too, you know. And you just, in the plane, you pull one SIM out, put the new SIM in, and it lands. And already when you land, you'll be able to get off the plane, open your WhatsApp and say, hey, Mom, I've arrived, you know.
Pierre, thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for your tech. We're going to try out ChatSIM, and we're going to let you know exactly how it works on Twit TV. Folks, you could overpay, you could get overpromised, or you could just chat.
Ooh, that's cool.
You're having a little too much fun there.
I was just getting down.
A little too much fun,
just
Jason.
Getting down.
Now, I actually bought a couple of these last year when they were $15 and they included everything. They actually bumped it up this year. So it's from $15 to $20 for the unlimited messaging. It's $40 if you want to use emojis.
I was going to say, I saw on their landing page, for unlimited text messages and emoji.
Yeah, that's like, oh, wait a minute. But okay.
Unlimited emoji? You got me.
Yeah, don't focus on that. Focus on the fact that $40 for a year of messaging on any of the countries that they list is pretty dang good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, you can actually go to the website. It'll show you the coverage map. The coverage map is awesome. The other thing you need to know about this is you might be thinking, oh, I can just continue to use like Google Hangouts or I use iMessage. No. So you do have to actually use one of the apps that the network allows you to use. And that right now it includes WhatsApp, which is huge. Mm-hmm. And actually, with everything that Google's doing to Hangouts right now, I'm kind of thinking about just getting over.
Yeah.
Because WhatsApp's been pretty solid.
Absolutely.
Whereas Google keeps messing around with their messaging app.
Never really know what you're getting.
Yeah. Well, you know what they really need, though? They need another messaging app and they need another payment app. If they could just do that, I'd be happy.
And maybe another video messaging app, too, would be great.
If you don't know what we're talking about, you need to watch All About Android every Tuesday at what time is it?
5 p.m. Pacific.
There you go.
8 p.m. Eastern.
So WhatsApp, Telegram, BBM. BBM. Do people say BBM?
I don't know. I'm sure somebody does.
Facebook Messenger, which is actually a big one. So a lot of people do use that. I don't because I like battery life on my phone. WeChat, QQI, Line, Hike, Kakao, and BIP.
BIP. Never heard of BIP.
BIP. I have used Kakao. Just because I really like the name.
It's a nice name.
It's fun. Yeah. So that's ChatSIM. Check it out. If you are backpacking, that's at the very minimum what you can do is just keep it in your bag because it does not activate until your first usage. So you can actually have one of these in your backpack until you need it in an emergency, and then you've got a year of messaging.
Oh, that's really nice.
That's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
It's like a little travel insurance policy.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right. There are some other parts of Mariko's kit that she did mention. She did mention that she's using the battery that I like, which is this. So this is this Anker battery that we took a look at last week.
Yep.
I like it just because it'll also charge my laptop. But if you're not looking for that, if you're not looking to charge your laptop over USB-C, there are much smaller versions than this. This is 1.3 pounds. It's crazy solidly built. I mean, it's like a solid billet of aluminum.
So heavy.
But it does contain a ton of power. I mean, if I'm just charging my phone, that battery will last me the entire month.
Yeah, this is nice. It feels solid. This is going to survive banging around in your bag while you're traveling.
Yeah, and it's also a self-defense weapon. You can, you know, sort of swing that thing around. You're going to give yourself a concussion.
Ow.
You deserve that, Jason.
Put to the test. Look, we're professional around here, okay? This is what we do.
In the head touch, Jason said, ow.
Yes.
Two owls.
.. That hurt.
Something else I might suggest is picking up a solar charger. It actually really does make sense for her because she's backpacking. This is like specifically what these things are designed for, not just for some guy who might want to set up in his office because, hey, it's solar. Mm-hmm. This is the Secure. We actually took a look at this before, if you go and get to the side view. Yeah, we took a look at this before. It's a 12-watt solar panel charger. What I like about this is it's ruggedized. So you always have to measure how much power it can create versus how fragile the thing is going to be. This is going to be in a backpack, so, I mean, you need something that you can really kind of bang around. This is it. It's about $100 from OpticalPlanet.com. So just go and jump over there. 10 amp hours of battery storage, 12-watt solar panel. That's two 6-watt panels. built into this thing. Dual USB ports at 2.4 amps, which is really kind of nice. And if you see the fold-out, yeah, so these are like polymer covered. It's got a built-in stand. So I can actually, if I pull this out here, I can actually do that. So I can angle it so that it will stay at the proper angle, like the when we stop.
So neat.
It's kind of
like
cool,
I feel like everyone needs this. I don't feel like this is a luxury. I feel like this is a necessity. If you have this for traveling, obviously you're gonna find reasons to use it and times to use it. This is almost necessary for like a home emergency kit too. If you have this for travel, you've got it at home. This thing's essential.
This is actually the one for my bug out bag. Yeah. So I do have it because you're always going to have a little gadget that might need a little extra juice. You know, the emergency radio or the phone. I mean, the phone is a great survival kit, but it's going to run out of power.
Absolutely. How long does this take to charge up the internal battery?
Depends how much sun you have. So that's whenever you got a solar product, it always depends how much direct sunlight can you give it.
Right.
You can completely charge the internal battery here in about a solid day of good sun.
Okay.
And then the cool thing about this is this. This is, I think this sets it aside from a lot of other products. Good. This is a little waterproof pouch. So you can actually put your phone in here, connect it to the charger, and then zip it back up.
And then it'll be protected from the elements wherever you happen to be. Maybe you're jumping off a waterfall.
Don't do that. Mariko, don't do that.
Don't do that. Try not to anyway.
Especially with all your gear, because you've got a laptop in there, remember? No, but the other cool thing is, and this is what I really like about this, these eyelets.
You can hang it.
Right. Hang it off the back of your backpack. Yeah. So as you are hiking, you're actually charging.
Need that. Okay, so how much is this one?
This one's $100.
Sold on this.
It's a little more expensive than some of the other products, but I've tested a lot of the other products. There's this and the Anker ones that I like because they're ruggedized. I had four other kits that I did the rundown with. The three of them broke. So the only ones that survived was this one and the Anker.
Where is the battery? Or the battery would be in here?
Oh, no. So the battery, this is the battery. So right here.
That tiny little thing is the battery.
That's a little battery.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's unfortunately, it's been in my go bag for a year now, so it's completely discharged. But, you know, a day out in the sun.
And then if you want to top it off traditionally, you can, right? You just plug it in and...
Yeah, there's a little adapter.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. So, why would you do that? You've got the sun. The sun's free, man.
But at the beginning of your trip...
Why do you hate free, Jason?
When you're staying at the hostel... And you have a
I've
spare
seen that movie.
Plug.
No way, man.
No, that movie painted hostels in a bad light, okay?
Although, having stayed at hostels, not completely inaccurate. Most of those are pretty shady. No, don't do it. Don't do it. Actually, how do I close this now? I'm having a senior moment. See, this is what happens when you get older. This is not hard to do. All right, so let's move on from that. So we did the tech part. We have a way to keep her connected. We have a way to keep her charged. She also asked for some other secrets, maybe, that we've learned over the years.
Okay.
Well, let's look at my power bag, shall we, Jason?
Yes.
Yeah, because what I like to have in my travel kit are things like this. This is paracord. If you go to the side view here, some of the strongest rope that you're going to be able to get, because this is actually used in making parachutes. That's paracord.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly useful. I always have a bundle of this in every go bag, in every travel bag, because you never know when
when you're going to need it.
But this is useful. What makes it crazy useful is when you combine it with things like this. You may know this is not a climbing carabiner. This is an equipment carabiner. If you tried to climb with this, you would die. So don't do that. But I always have about 10 of these in every bag I travel with, along with paracord, because I can cut lengths of this. I can use it as laundry cord. I can use it to hang pieces of gear off my bag. Yep. I can use it to secure things that are broken. Incredibly flexible. And I always like to have a couple of things in my kit that in case stuff goes wrong, at least I have some raw materials to work with.
Right.
And these are great, great raw materials.
Absolutely.
Now, again, these are not climbing grade, because climbing grade carabiners are huge and ridiculously expensive. But they would actually, you put three of these together, they would support your weight.
Sure.
Not my weight, but it's your weight, definitely.
Yeah, and I mean, these are good for, you know, if you've got one of those pack-away hammock things, these are good for kind of securing around a tree for that sort of thing.
Oh, and by the way, Baris in the chat room he kind of poshes at our can't climb with it. You're right. You actually can climb with these once.
You can until you can't anymore.
Until you can't. And then you never will. Yeah. So, yeah, don't do
and
it.
And then that's the end of your climbing.
You actually could climb with this paracord. Even I could climb with this paracord. This is rated for 550 feet. I wouldn't, 550 pounds. I wouldn't want to just because it's not what it's designed for. Because you start to fray it and then it's the same thing with the carabiners.
Yeah.
But again,
you
nice and strong.
You want a confidence while you're climbing.
Right, right. You actually had something that you thought should go into her kit.
Well, I mean, mainly because I've been reviewing it, and actually on last week's new screensavers, you can find my full review of this, but I have the Zolo, which is a sub-brand of Anchor.
It's, that's completely unplanned. We got a lot of Anchor today.
Yeah, Liberty Plus earphones. And so, you know, we've heard of the AirPods. These are Bluetooth 5 earphones.
So these just kind of do a happy dance on top of the AirPods, right?
Well, I don't think they look nearly as nerdy in the ears as the AirPods do.
Wait, are we going for that?
Well, I mean, I guess to some it doesn't matter, but to me it just looks more normal. Like when I see AirPods and like, what is
you
that
don't like,
hanging out of
you don't
your
like
ear?
It when people look like they have chopsticks pointing out of their ears?
It's weird to me. And also, I mean, these are a little bit more open. Well, they're Bluetooth 5, so they have some extra functionality and characteristics from Bluetooth 5. Better connectivity. Like, I never had any audio dropouts in testing these. I think what's cool about this for travel, though, and the reason that I'm even bringing it onto this show, is because each of these earphones can carry anywhere between 3 to 4 hours of charge, which may not sound like an insane amount. It's not like a full day's worth of charge in these tiny little earphones, but that's long enough for what I need. This case carries an additional 40 hours of charge.
Oh, I love
it. So you charge this up in a couple of hours. Yeah. Whenever you're done using your earphone, you just drop it into the case, the contacts hold, and you can kind of see the little readout right there. That means I have between 30 to 70% of charge. I don't know if you can see that in the overhead.
Yeah.
There are actually 3 or 4 total dots, so this might be below 50% at this point. But, I mean, it just lasts. It keeps going and going. Like, you're going to store those earphones somewhere. You're going to put it in the case, right? That's where you're going to put it. And when you do that, it starts to pass the charge from the case over to the earphones, so they're always charged up when you need to use them.
They're held in magnetically.
Yeah. Yeah, they're held in magnetically. Nice. So
actually, even the case feels nice.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. Like it feels pretty solid. You have some basic controls for Bluetooth stuff like answering calls, skipping forward.
Is there charging capability in the case for the earpods or AirPods or whatever they call those?
That's one of the features of the AirPods too. This is kind of like we're coming to expect this.
Right, right.
But I think what really sets this apart is 40 hours of charge here. That's so if you're traveling, you just charge this up while you're, again, staying at that scary hostel. It's only going to take you a couple of hours, and you charge up the case, and you're solid. Like, you can go for days, depending on how much you're actually listening to music while you're traveling. So, $150. There is the Zolo Liberty No Plus, and it's running, and that is half the amount of charge in the case.
What do you lose, though?
Half of the amount of charge in the case. It's also Bluetooth 4.2, not Bluetooth 5. And apparently, from what I've read, that results in some audio dropouts,
a little bit of artifacting,
connection issues. I never experienced that one single time with these. I've been really happy with these.
Just get these.
Yeah, worth checking out. There are probably headphones that sound better than these. There actually definitely are. But I think the convenience factor of this for travel is really great.
And the cool thing about this is, so you've got the solar panel on your backpack with the Zolo case inside getting charged up as you're walking, and then you finish the day of walking, you put them back in the charger, and they're good to go again.
Yep, they're good to go again. Boom. Next time you
use. See, so this is what we're doing for you.
Yeah.
We do this for you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Americo did have one other part of her question about the USB monitor. Now, she specifically mentioned the one that I like. I'm a big fan of the Asus screens. This is actually their updated version. I bought this one because I left my other one in Rome. Someone liked it. This is actually their Zen screen. Now, the nice thing about this is
that's a big screen to backpack with.
Yeah,
think?
If you go to the side view. The side view. The view on the side. There you go. So this is a 15.6-inch screen. It's USB-C. What I like about the updated version is it will work on both standard USB and on USB screens ports. So I can switch it back and forth. It is a beautiful, beautiful picture. I don't travel without something like this anymore because I'm so accustomed to multi-monitors that I want it even when I'm traveling with my little teeny tiny laptop. And I guess Mariko has figured it out that that's the same way for her. One problem, this is a USB device, which means it needs to be plugged into a laptop. And she mentioned that in addition to using it as a second screen for editing, she'd like to be able to like hook up a Blu-ray player to it, probably for entertainment.
And there's no connection whatsoever for that sort of thing.
No, so that doesn't work. Unless you were to put some sort of adapter on the laptop to accept like an HDMI connection, and even then you're adding some lag. She also mentioned that she wanted to use it as a camera monitor for when she's doing her shoots. That's not going to work. Luckily, I do have a product that will work. This is just a first look. I want to give it a full review by taking it around the world with me. I got this because, like her, I had the desire to have some HDMI input. I love my USB screen, but sometimes I need to hook up other devices. This is the G-Chick. We don't have a link there, Burke, because this is, again, just a first look. This is about $350. It's way more expensive than the other device. However, the cool thing about this is it does have HDMI. It's got this integrated stand that lets me choose different positions based on how much angle I want. So if I want a lot, I want a crazy amount of angle, like that, or all the way up like that, which is kind of cool. In this case, I'm going to go flat for now. On the side here, actually, go to the overhead, see if this is in focus. I have no idea.
Yeah, of course not.
Oh wait, wait. Oh, it's on manual. It's on autofocus.
There we go.
Wait. No, stay. Stay here. Stay with me.
There we go.
So this is what I've got. I've got Stop it.
Yeah, it needs more area to focus. There we go.
I've got HDMI. I've got VGA. This is just the power connector. So it uses USB-C power, and it even has a headphone out and speakers. So if you wanted to hook up a gaming console to this, you could. If you wanted to hook up your Blu-ray player or your laptop or a camera so you could do preview mode, this absolutely works. It's also a 15.6-inch screen, so it's just like the Asus Zen screen. It's a tiny bit heavier. It also has a docking option that I can use here on the back in case I want to hook up like a full-time switcher to it. It's a phenomenally flexible product. I'm surprised I haven't found this till now, because I've been looking for this kind of capability forever. It does have, I mean, it's not as portable as the other one.
The case, like the other one has a more elegant kind of case quality to it. This feels kind of clunky.
Yeah, far more industrial. More industrial on this. But it's also far more rough.
Versatile.
It's durable. This case actually will protect the screen. I would put this into my backpack and not worry about, you know, scratching anything up.
Totally.
But again, the big thing is the fact that I can hook up things other than my laptop. That is an amazing capability for a device this small. I know there's some people who still poo-poo the idea of using a second screen on a laptop, but I'm sold. I mean, I don't want to use a laptop unless I have multiple screens. I'm just so much more efficient when I can see multiple windows at the same time.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. So we're going to see that, and we're also going to be bringing this back. This is the other option. I know she was probably thinking about this when she brought it up. I brought this back out of the storeroom. This is the Nebula. This one, the capsule. We saw this at CES. A tiny little Pico projector. It's actually running Android in here. The cool thing about this is she wouldn't actually have to hook up any wires. It's got its own battery. And you can also charge this off of the solar panel. It's got its own internal battery, so I could wirelessly broadcast to this from my MacBook, from my Android device, from my PC. I could play directly off of this. This might actually be the way that she wants to go if you're looking more for entertainment than productivity. And again, nice and small. We're going to be doing full reviews on both of these. We've promised that for a while, but I kind of need some travel time because that's what they've been designed for. I actually want to take these around the world, see how they work before I make my final judgment.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Let's do one last segment, Jason.
Good package.
One last segment. We're talking about travel.
Yeah.
Last week, Megan brought in her iOS travel apps.
I remember that. That was one of my favorite parts of that episode.
Totally, right? Yeah. I was like that. Oh, that one? That whole.
Oh,
wow.
Man, that one? Oh, hey, don't even get me started about that one.
But let's go ahead and jump into the Android side. What apps should she be running on her Pixel 2?
All right. Well, so I kind of went through and dove into both my mental archives and then all about Android archives, because we've had a ton of apps over 350 some odd episodes, four apps per episode, a ton of travel apps. And yeah. I was like, yeah, I got to remind myself of some of the really cool things that you can find on Android as far as travel is concerned. So some of these you've probably heard of, and I'm just going to start with Google's apps, because Google actually offers a couple of essential apps as far as I'm concerned. You could probably find these on iOS. Well, I know some of these you can anyways. I don't know about one of these. But anyways, one of my all-time favorite apps, period, hands down, end of story, is the Google Maps app.
Yes.
That feels like a softball app to throw in there. But quite honestly, it's just a workhorse. You know, for navigation, you've got walking directions that you can do. You can download offline maps wherever you happen to be going. Also has kind of a guide area that you can, I don't know if this is arranged appropriately, but kind of a guide area based on, you know, what location you're at. So if you need some ideas on things that you want to do while you're there, gas stations. I mean, it just, the Maps app has continually over years just been improved and improved and improved. I feel like it's essential.
I would say that Google Maps is my number one travel app.
Yeah.
Because I can download an entire country into my offline memory. And I've got everything. So even if I don't have connectivity when I first arrive, I can at least make my way around the city.
Yep.
Which is, it's amazing the fact that it's free. It won't cost me anything. It almost kind of like, wait a minute.
With Google, free means you're giving them possible data about your entire life. But anyways, if it's worth it to you, it's a great app.
I will say this. You can turn off, in your privacy settings, you can turn off them logging your location and still use Google Maps.
Oh, man. Well, I won't show it off because it'll show certain things that, let's just say, I don't want on live stream. But, yeah, if you're okay with Google storing all this information, you can do the timeline feature.
That's kind of cool.
And you can go back for days, and you can see exactly where you went on a map every single day. It imports your Google Photos with timestamps, so that when it sees that you were at that beach 3 days ago, in line with your timeline, it also shows you the photos you took while you were there. It's magical. And especially when you need to know where you went because you need to go back there, you just find it in the timeline, navigate to it, and poof, you're right off to it.
You can always tell when I'm doing a visit that we should not talk about, because my timeline is full. And then there's like a 3 week gap, and then it comes back, and then another 3 week gap. And I've been trying to convince them. I'm like, you know, the fact that there's a gap there tells people more than if there's no gap.
Yeah.
So what do you want me to do exactly?
This is a little bit of a side tangent, but this is the perfect place to talk about it, because every time I use maps in this way, I think of this. If I was on Google's marketing team and I needed to create an advertisement for Google for the Maps app, I would show somebody traveling the world, right, and using it, you know, take me to this beach or whatever, and they're going, the family's, you know, all having fun, they're doing all these things, and then at the very end of it, they get in the car and they go, okay, G, navigate home, and it just goes, bloop, and it points them home, and it's just like, and it even knows how to take me home at the end of it all.
How
it's
have you not awesome. Given this idea to them? Oh, actually, I think I just did.
Oh. I've been thinking about this for a few years now. I'm like, man, if I was on their marketing team, this would be the perfect ad.
If you see that ad on TV, you know where it came from. It came from Jason Howell, folks.
I'll go ahead and pop my collar, because...
Yeah. No.
Okay. All right. So that's just one app that you've probably already heard of.
It really is a good one.
One that maybe you haven't heard of is called Trips. It's another Google app. And Trips is really cool because, again, if you're sharing your data through your email, if you're sharing all this information with Google, that can fuel their Trips app to kind of combine all of the information that will be important to you while you're traveling somewhere. Let's say, I mean, these are all trips that I've, you know, some of these are trips that I've taken in the past. This is a good one because it's in the past, Lake Tahoe. I can go in there and I can see kind of any reservations that we had associated with that trip. The hotel that we stayed at actually was an Airbnb. I could find that. Things to do while I'm in the area, so it knows where I'm going and it can kind of tell me some different ideas to do while I'm there. I can set up day plans, so I can actually go through here and find what other people have set up, sites in the area, all this kind of stuff. It allows you to import the information about your trip into one single place and create kind of a whole package around it.
I understand why that's useful, but I would find that exhausting.
I didn't do anything. I literally installed this app, and here it is.
No, in that I kind of want to mark off all the little dots.
Oh, okay.
And that would destroy my trip, because sometimes I just want to chill and watch the trees.
No, for sure. And actually, there's offline as well. So you can download these offline for when you don't have connectivity. It's just kind of a cool way. Yeah. If anything, it's a cool way to package up your reservations, your confirmation emails, your flight information into one easy-to-access place instead of having to jump into your email,
a browser where you may not have good connectivity.
Right.
But, okay, so that's cool. So I've got my maps so that at least I know where I am. I've got my trip so I know all the important information about my trip. But, Jason, there's one thing that I know there's never been an app for and there never will be an app for, and that's the fact that I'm going to countries where I may not speak the language.
Ooh, I like where you're headed with this, because guess what? Google has that covered, too.
No way!
Google, all-knowing Google, knows how to translate with the Google Translate app.
It's almost as if I have a list of the apps you're going to talk about.
I think you're staring at my notes. Stop it. Translate is great. Translate, though, is an app that I can safely say and admit that I haven't actually used in this.
Oh, I use it all the time.
In this way, I've never gone traveling somewhere and been like, "Gosh, how do I say this?" and then use Translate. It has a mode where I can actually, it's right here, conversation mode, where if I'm going somewhere that's where they speak Spanish or whatever, I can hit that. Where's the shoe store?
Por favor, dígame dónde está la zapatería.
There you go.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
Oh, see, so it does a conversation mode where I speak in my language, it tells you what you will understand. You speak in your language, it will tell me what I'm going to understand. So it's kind of cool like that. You might get a few strange stares when you're passing your device back and forth in the midst of that. You can also save phrases. Like, apparently I'm really interested in shoe stores because in my phrase book I have saved, where's the shoe store? ¿Dónde está la zapatería? So I could save that in there. I can take pictures if there's a sign and I can't read the
sign.
That's
the part I love. In fact, when I was thinking about Google Glass, that was the one thing I actually wanted them to bring over.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if I could walk down a street in Italy,
like,
look around and automatically all the signs are translated. Like, that's worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
This still works, but it's kind of clunky walking around with a phone and like, okay, what's that? What's that?
And you can do the live. You can either take a picture of it or you can do just live pass through, and that's really cool. The Translate app does a lot of really kind of magical things when you think about it. It translates between 103 languages. It's just really cool what it can do. I've just never been in a situation where I've needed to use it for that. But I can imagine if you're overseas backpacking or wherever you happen to be going, this is a good one to have installed in case you need it.
Indeed.
All right, so that's Google Apps. Let's get out of the Google world a little bit.
No, I like the Google world.
Google world's great. Don't get me wrong. I could spend an entire many shows talking about Google. In fact, I do every Tuesday on All About Android.
Wait, what time is that?
5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
If they want to find old episodes, they could go to a page, right?
twit.tv/AAA for All About Android.
I'll go figure. That's weird.
Right. Anyways, okay, so here's five apps from the archives that I've actually liked in the world of travel. First one is called SkipLagged.
Oh.
SkipLagged, if you've never heard of it, is a multi-service airline search for booking airlines. What's different here is that it includes something called hidden city fares. Do you know what those are?
I cannot do these. Yes, so there are a lot of flights that have a layover, that if you try to fly to the layover, it will be far more expensive than if you fly through the layover city. So what you can do is you can actually find the hidden layovers and get off at that particular airport and save yourself a ton of money.
That's it.
One problem, and this is why it affects me. If you have an airline loyalty program that you're running, like for me it's Medallion for Delta. If you do that, they can actually cancel your frequent flyer account.
Okay, well that's a good asterisk to add on.
Know that, yes.
Yes, if you don't have that though, there's nothing stopping you. It's not against the rules to do this. I mean, maybe it is for those particular scenarios.
They don't like
but
it.
For a general public, there's nothing stopping you from really doing this. SkipLagged allows you to book with that in mind, and you can actually save some money in the process, over a traditional cost versus doing this sort of hidden city approach. So just kind of a good way to do that, that type of booking if you want to save some money. Another one for booking that I like is called Hopper. Ooh. And Hopper is around – oh, did I – here, let's see.
Did you delete the Hopper?
Oh, okay. Hopper is around predictive pricing. So Hopper analyzes kind of over time the history of pricing for what you're booking and allows you to say, this is what I want. Tell me when the price is as low as it could possibly be based on your analysis and your information.
This I would use because I can't tell you how many times I'm like checking. I'm going back. And like, yeah, is this the lowest or is it still going to drop? And then the next week it goes up and I freak out and I buy the ticket.
Okay, so I'm just putting something in here randomly, selecting these dates from San Francisco to Las Vegas. And it'll say $112 round trip is the current low price from SFO to Las Vegas. I'm watching this currently, right? Watch this trip. And if it sees it drop below this as we approach closer to the time, it'll let me know. It has a little bit of a prediction area down here.
Nice.
Where it can kind of tell you if it happens to know based on its historical data that there is a certain part of time, you know, upcoming where it might drop or it might go up, and it'll say, hey, things are increasing. Now might be a good time to buy your ticket. So
and,
you can
and
save
you
some money that
combine
way.
That with some of the well-known bits of wisdom for buying tickets. Always book midweek. Don't book on the weekends. They always tend to be more expensive because all the major airlines are using the predictive pricing now. Also, if you're going to just check a couple of times, go into incognito mode before you check.
Because yeah,
they'll actually
do.
Use your cookies to say, hey, he's checked this flight 16 times in the last 2 weeks. We should probably jack it up a little bit.
I hate that that even happens, that that's a consideration. Yeah. But it is. It's worth knowing. If you're doing a road trip, I mean, basically the thing that's going to cost you the most money while you're traveling on the road is gas, right? You want to know where cheap gas is. Gas Buddy is an app that you can load up. To help you along your way find the cheapest gas.
Gas Buddy sounds like something you don't want on that line.
You know who I took on my trip?
A gas buddy.
And it was a smelly trip. No, different type of gas.
Okay, good,
entirely.
Good.
$2.99 is the best price in my area, apparently, for gas. Find gas near you, and it'll use your location. What kind? Well, my Subaru actually does take premium, so I'll go ahead and do that.
Oh,
and
you've got one of those fancy cars.
I wouldn't call it fancy. I spend too much on gas because of this turbo boxer engine. We just didn't think about it when we got the car in 2005. So, anyways, I love the car otherwise. And it'll, you know, along your route, it'll show you what the price of gas is, and it'll allow you to be able to pick smartly. And, you know, all that adds up on a per gallon basis. So you can find a spot that's coming up that's cheaper than the spot that's right in front of you and save some money.
It's a lot easier for me because we use corporate fleet and corporate cards. So I can fuel up at any gas station as long as it's a Chevron.
Oh, okay.
That's how it works.
Well,
it's really
easy
in desert land. So if there's
Chevron
no Chevrons,
right,
we abandon the cars.
I'm
going
to go to Chevron because I know you won't be there. Here, let's go. And someone in chat, Baris, is pointing out, Baris used Gas Buddy all the time, said Google Maps kind of killed it for me by putting fuel prices on the map.
Gas Buddy is still a little bit better.
That's another way to do it.
Still a little bit better.
Well, you know, sometimes, like, Maps does everything.
Yeah.
Sometimes those features can be a little buried, too. It might not be as easy to analyze compared to something that's focused on just this thing. Another along the Buddy line of things is Lounge Buddy. If you're flying and you've got loyalty, if you're a loyalty member. Different,
Padre. I've got a Gas Buddy and a Lounge Buddy in my car. It's like, this is not something like a road trip I want to be on.
You've never traveled with me before. Lounge Buddy is all about airports and the lounges in the airports and what kind of access you have based on credit cards that you have, based on your loyalty memberships, you know, to certain airlines and everything. So you can actually view all the lounges. Like in this case, I'm close to SFO.
I used to airport lounges, Delta specifically.
And you can find the good ones, the ones that, you know, allow you to smoke if that's your thing, allow you to drink, allow you to shower.
I love a shower on a cross-Atlantic trip.
There we go. Sorry, I'm flailing about in front of the phone, and I'm making the focus be weird. So there we go.
This is bad. This is not bad, but okay, there's one last thing that I really need to take care of.
What is it?
Sometimes I'm traveling, and I don't want to poop on the side of the road.
Well, Don't worry. You don't have to do that anymore.
Okay.
I know you've done that a lot.
A lot. All the time.
I'm going to save you from that.
Here in Marin County? Oh, my goodness.
With an app called Flush. Is an actual
app. It's not Flush Buddy. Come on.
No, really. They missed out on an obvious opportunity. Flush Buddy should be the name. But it's called Flush, and it's a crowdsourced toilet locator. Not sure. Personally, I've never used this. Not sure how effective it is, but it exists. And it's a thing. There's a toilet apparently 0.6 miles away. And it gives you, you know, little information if it knows it. Does the access require a key?
Does it require a fee? Let's list the Twit toilet. We should list the Twit toilet here. That would be awesome.
Oh, my goodness. No, let's not do that. We'll go there. DNS Lakeville BP. Obviously, there's information that's missing here. It is crowdsourced, so... It's probably only as good. Those toilets are only as documented as the people that have Flush installed and are actually using it.
So, Jason Howell, the man to go to if you need to skip, hop, need any sort of buddy or a Flush.
Yeah. Yep. I'm your man.
That's kind of weird. Hmm. Jason, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, folks, we realize that this has been a lot of information. We've thrown a bunch of stuff at you, everything from the BitLocker to the backpacking to some apps. Definitely the buddies. We want you to visit the Know-How Buddy, and you're going to find the Know-How Buddy at twit.tv/KH. There you're going to find all of our back episodes, our show notes, so you can find the links to the products that we talked about, the links and the names of the apps that Jason talked about, and also, more importantly, the subscribe links. This is important. If you want to support Know-How, if you want to see us continue to do fun things together, just go to twit.tv/KH. There you'll find a little drop-down menu so you can get the version of choice, audio, video, or high-definition video, into your device of choice. Again, that's twit.tv/KH. Also, don't forget that we're on the social. Specifically, we're on Google+. Just go over to Google+, look for Know-How, ask to join. You're going to be a moderator as soon as you create an account.
I keep meaning to do that. I'm sorry. I will.
Ask to join. It's a very short approval process because we want to keep out the spam accounts. But once you're in, you get access to almost 12,000 Kitas. Those are our know-it-alls, people who are on every stage of their Maker DIY journey. Once you're in, you can ask questions, answer questions, post videos, and maybe they'll end up here on the show. Of course, that's not the only place to find us on the socials. Jason, where are you?
I'm at Jason Howell. Pretty easy to remember.
Yeah, that's it. Just Jason and Al.
Yeah, nothing fancy.
Yeah. And you can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. And you can find the third member of our group, who today is, we call him Berkey Alex. It's like an Alex, but way grumpier. You can find Berkey Alex at ForTheBurk, twitter.com/ForTheBurk.
Four,
the Burk. Visit there and tell him he did a good job, because he needs to hear it otherwise. He'll do bad things to us.
Yeah, he'll cry.
Yeah, how about that? Until next time, I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And now that you know how,
go travel somewhere and let us know how it goes.
Yeah. With your buddy.
With your buddy.
And Father.